Florida law. Ask an attorney. Just give him a call.
This is Ask an Attorney. All about Florida law with attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open. Hey, if you have a legal question of any type, here's your toll-free number, 877-943-9673. Again, the law office is open. It's Saturday morning, June 15th. Happy Father's Day to my father, especially, as we get ready to celebrate that tomorrow. So, if you have a legal question, though, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Your question can be about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, marital law, real estate law. And today, especially, you can call about criminal law. I'd like to introduce a guest in studio from Jacksonville here, Malcolm Anthony, attorney Malcolm. Good morning.
Good morning.
Malcolm's a criminal law attorney, so we talked a little bit about some of the topics that when I have a criminal law attorney on, I usually get a lot of, can I expunge or seal my records from the past? And if you have a question about that, maybe you haven't been able to get a job or you have to put it down on your job application, something from your past. Maybe it could have even been when you're 18, 19, 20 in college and it's just haunted you all these years. Can you get rid of it? Can you conceal it? Can you expunge it? So if you have a question about that, Malcolm also does a lot of traffic law. So if you have a traffic situation, including DUIs, have a question about that, you can also give us a call. Again, the toll-free number for any of your questions is 877-943-9673, 877-943-9673. So the last couple of weeks, I've gotten a question each week about medical marijuana cards and concealed weapons permit. And can you have both in the state of Florida? So I was talking to Malcolm about this yesterday, and I had him do a little research. And Malcolm, what'd you find out?
Well, first of all, the application for the carry concealed weapons permit has a question on there. It has several questions that... some many disqualifiers, but the one that I caught my attention was one that asks, are you an unlawful user or addicted to a controlled substance named in a federal statute, and the definitions under the federal statute. So the overarching thing you got to remind yourself is that this is an administrative function. And that the government, and in its administrative capacity, is going to be making decisions, and things aren't as hard and fast as we would like, because people may have different definitions of unlawful use or is it a lawful use. Now, if you've got a Florida card in Florida, you're using it lawfully. So, and if you're not addicted, then I think you can answer that question. No, I'm not an unlawful user or an addict. But once again, it's still going to be an administrative function. They're going to make a decision on you know, the ways you answer your questions.
Yeah, well, one concern might be, though, for people that do a little traveling, crossing state lines, because that would be the law in Florida. Let's say that's a law in Florida. So if you can honestly say you're not addicted and you have a medical marijuana card and you use marijuana for health purposes and otherwise you're not addicted, you have the legal right to use marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
So you haven't committed any crimes, so you probably can qualify for a concealed weapons permit or not going to lose it just because you have a medical marijuana card.
Right, from what I can tell, just looking at it briefly. But then you mentioned crossing state lines, and that brings us to another issue on the carrying a concealed weapons permit. There are several states that have reciprocity with Florida on that issue and some that don't.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're driving from here to Virginia... you might, 60% of the states might have, it's okay, and you know, the other ones you want. You know, I know in North Carolina, if you have a certain type of tint on your windshield, you're in trouble, you know?
Right.
And, so every state's different.
And in Florida, just for those out there, just for your own knowledge, is that without any type of special permitting, you are allowed to transport a firearm within a private vehicle as long as it is securely encased. So the term securely encased has been interpreted in many case law instances to mean in a secure holster that has a flap or a lock on it, in a box, and things like that. So even without a weapons permit, a citizen is entitled to do that.
All right, so let's go to our first caller. Let's give out the numbers, though. If you have a legal question, criminal law question, or any other type of legal question, the law office is open for you. You have a toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. Let's go to Al in Tampa.
Yes, good morning.
Hey,
quick question. Hi there. If you're in a housing development, let's say in Carrollwood, where it's all private homes and everybody pays their yearly fees, but the association wants to, a couple people say they want to try and send letters to put liens on some of the houses who haven't pressure washed their driveway or pressure washed their roof. Can that be done?
Well, I think the general rule in communities like that is if you can contest that, and usually people contest that in that they're not enforcing all of the rules, so they can't, you know, just selectively go after one particular rule against, you know, a homeowner if they're not enforcing all of the other rules. So a lot of times you drive into communities and there are basketball courts where they shouldn't be, there are boats and vans parked where they shouldn't be. People haven't paid any attention to, you know, some of the other rules, and then they get picky on one or two rules. They have to enforce them all, or basically they're going to lose if they try to enforce it, just one in particular.
But if they do apply a lien, does the lien start accruing?
No, you have time to object to the lien, though.
Okay.
You have a period.
I didn't know if, let's say, one of the homeowners who does need to do something to their driveway, need a pressure wash, but let's say they ignore it for the year, would they be,
You have to timely object to the rule, and then the court would basically decide.
Gotcha.
So you probably need an attorney to go over the timelines with you.
Now, elderly adults in their 70s, when they do a will and a trust, can they allow the inheritance to go to their granddaughter who's over 18 and exclude the daughter? Is that permitted if the daughter was to fight that?
Yeah, a person who owns money or does a will or trust can leave it to whoever they want to. There are no automatic rights for children or grandchildren. So if you have three children and want to exclude one or two of them, there's no problem. As long as there's no undue influence, usually is...
Gotcha.
You're fine.
Okay. You handle that type of thing.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you have a good day and a good Father's Day and stay safe.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. You're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. I have a special guest in studio today, Malcolm Anthony from Jacksonville, criminal law attorney. And we're going to be talking about expunging and sealing records and DUIs and all kinds of things. If you have a criminal law question, take advantage of Malcolm being here today. As you know, I don't usually have guests very often in the show, so this is a specialty in criminal law. And if you have a criminal law question, don't have to use your real name or anything when you're calling. But if you have a criminal law question, I'd be more than glad to try to help you. Again, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. So, Malcolm, really somebody from the past who, I know there are certain exceptions to things that can't be expunged, but if somebody has a question wondering whether they fall into the category where it can be expunged, how long of a procedure does it take you to, I mean, you can probably go online when you're almost talking to someone and look at what they've been charged with or what their past is, and you can probably even immediately you tell them whether or not you have a chance of getting it concealed.
Yeah, it's generally about a three-step process. The first step is really a no, you're not eligible, because the ineligibilities are patent. I mean, with five or six questions, I can say you're not eligible. So the first step is a no or maybe. You know, if you're not immediately disqualified, I can say maybe, let me look at it more. And we go to step two, which is basically I can determine yes or no with a little more research, looking at the record and the history. And then step three, if it's a yes, then proceeding forward with the sealing and expunction. And the one of the negatives right now in sealing and expunging in Florida is that FDLE, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, is about 6 to 8 months behind in processing for certificates of eligibility, which are required in order to make your filing your pleadings in court to get it done. So in other words, we've got to do all this preliminary getting things prepared, fingerprint card, and things of that nature to FDLE, and they issue a certificate of eligibility, then we can file in court. So in order to even file in court, it's going to be 6 to 8 months just to get that certificate from Florida Department of Law Enforcement.
All right, during the show, I'm going to make up a few examples along the way, and you can tell me yes, no, or maybe.
Okay.
All right. So the first one is an elderly person gets caught shoplifting, and of course they're going to say accidentally put it in their purse or pocket and we're going to pay for it on the way out, and they get charged with a shoplifting crime. So, and they had never committed any other crimes in the past. Would that be, I'm thinking that would be a slam dunk. You could conceal that record.
Not necessarily. It would depend on what happened in the prosecution of that shoplifting. Did the state divert the case and they never charged the person with it? In other words, she did some community service hours and the state said, well, we're not going to charge you. It's called a diversion. Did the state charge her and she enter a plea of guilty or no contest? Then the question was she adjudicated guilty, or did the court withhold adjudication of guilt? Because the very initial easiest disqualifier, and Florida law is fairly strict on this, ever have been convicted of any crime in Florida, and you cannot have been convicted of the crime which you want to seal. So the first question was she adjudicated guilty of that or not?
Okay. And if she was?
If she was, she's ineligible for any sealing or expunction.
All right. So let's go to Attorney John Frazier, have him call in with the Medicaid Elder Law Veterans Benefit Tip of the Week. Good morning, John.
Hey, Joe. How you doing today?
Very good. And you?
Good.
So what's our tip for the week for those interested in Medicaid or VA benefits?
Well, I was going to talk about one or two, misconceptions about applying for Medicaid. The first question would be, if your family member is already in a nursing facility, is it too late to protect the assets? And I think, the very clear answer on that is no. I would say that the vast majority of the people who contact our office, the family member is already in the nursing facility. That is definitely a huge misconception. And I think the longer that you wait, clearly the more money that you're going to spend. I've seen several instances. I have one or two right now where the family member was in the nursing facility for a full year, paying over $100,000 a year for the person's care. Had we started the process a year earlier, we could have saved that $100,000. So I think that's a huge misconception.
Yeah, a lot of your cases, John, you can move things around and qualify them in about 2 months, right? 60 days, I tell people that you...
Yeah, I would say 30 to 60 days. It really depends. A lot of the situations involve someone who's been in a hospital for a three-day inpatient stay. So most of those clients will be eligible for some Medicare coverage up to a full 20 days, and then up to 100 days with partial coverage between 21 and 100 days. So that the Medicare coverage actually buys us some time in most of our cases. Not all cases, but most of my clients have had a three-day inpatient stay in the hospital first, and they're actually covered under Medicare for the initial part of their stay. So that certainly
helps. All right.
Up.
John, someone has a family member in a nursing home and they're spending a lot of money and they'd like to talk to you about how to move assets around and qualify the person for Medicaid and protect the estate. How do they contact you?
The office number is 727-586-3306, extension 104. My cell phone's area code 813-431-3193, and my email address is johnjohn@attypip.com.
All right, and I'll be giving out the contact information for the firm during the show. John, I hope you have a great weekend.
Okay, you too.
All right, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Let's go to George in Jacksonville.
Good morning. I got a simple question on carrying a weapon. Is carrying the gun in your console of your car legal or glove compartment?
George, that's a good question. It depends on whether that's considered securely encased. And if it's in your glove compartment or in your console, I would think that's securely encased and lawful. And most of the cases I've seen has been where the person has been arrested for the violation, is it stuck between the seat and the console or something like that. So that sounds to me to be securely encased, but out of an abundance of caution, I think I would put it in a zippered pack, whether I put it in the glove box or the center console, just out of an abundance of caution.
Okay, great.
Malcolm, is there a two-step? Is there a holster and glove box? I mean, is that a myth rule?
That's a myth. That's a very common myth you hear a lot. Well, if it takes two steps, that's a common myth.
So just in a holster is sufficient?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, is it securely encased? If it's just an open holster, that does not qualify. It's got to have a snap or something to where the term is securely encased, and then, of course, that's going to be subject to judicial interpretation.
No, does it have to be concealed, though? I mean, if it's in your car seat in a proper holster sitting there, is that okay?
Well, that's the interesting conundrum in Florida law, okay, because the violation is usually carrying a concealed weapon. And so weapons that are stuck between where only a handle's view, you know, I've seen represented people arrested for that. And I used to just set it on the dash. Well, then it's not concealed. But open carrying of firearms is prohibited by Florida law also. So
I remember making a big mistake, but no police came and nobody got. But a person died and they had a bunch of guns in there. In their estate. So I just kind of was carrying two rifles and three or four pistols, and I walked into a gun store trying to sell them, but I was just carrying these things out in the open. And they, oh, no, here, let me take those back. I'm going to bring you some cases to put them in.
Yeah.
They didn't want me to walk into the store with with exposed guns.
There isn't even a provision in law to take your guns from your house and walk in your driveway and put them in your car. I mean, technically, that'd be a violation.
Yeah, so, this is what the gun store is worried about, is me walking into the store.
Right.
All right, let's go to Larry in Bartow.
Hello.
Hey, Larry.
Yes.
What can we do for you?
When a defendant signs a document, do not waive my rights to a speedy trial, and they are ignored, and he ends up incarcerated for 7.5 years. How long can the state hold him without going to trial?
The person was incarcerated for 7.5 years without a trial?
He's still incarcerated now.
Well, anytime one waives your constitutional right to speedy trial, you can revoke that.
He did not waive his rights, but they were ignored as the...
Well, has he ever had an attorney represent him?
Yes.
Well, do you think the attorney waived the right to a speedy trial? I mean, he was represented by an attorney. The attorney usually is in charge of that, right, Malcolm?
Well, with client consent.
His original attorney waived the rights.
Oh, there you go.
So he had a waiver He signed a waiver of right to a speedy trial, has never been tried, and has been incarcerated for 7.5 years. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, if that's an issue with him, he needs to revoke that waiver and request a trial date.
That's what I'm saying.
Is he using the public defender at this point?
Yes.
Well, I think he needs to have a meeting with his public defender and get this thing off center.
That's what we keep trying to do. I mean, it just keeps bouncing around in the court system.
Well, it's fairly simple. Next time he comes to court, he'll be there personally. He can ask the judge. Well, first of all, he's got to ask his attorney, his public defender, I want to revoke that waiver, speedy trial. I want to set a trial date. I've been incarcerated for 7.5 years, and I need a judicial determination. I find it hard to believe that even the judge would let something go on that long without
a trial
date. Yeah, don't
they have status meetings once in a while?
Yeah, every couple of weeks, usually. So
there's been three different judges on the case.
Mm-hmm. He has a right. He doesn't waive his right. In other words, I've signed a waiver of my speedy trial rights. Now you can hold me forever without even sentencing me, you know, lifetime. No, that can't happen. So he has a right to revoke that waiver and get a trial date. And it's hard to believe it's been going on that long without a trial date already, unless there's something very unusual about the case.
Well, he signed a document, do not waive my rights to a speedy trial. And his original attorney went ahead and waived them anyway.
Well, if he wants to, he can revoke that the next time he's in court, either through his attorney or if his attorney doesn't cooperate with him, request the court to appoint someone else or request the court openly to revoke his right to a speedy trial. He can request a trial date anytime he's in court. And if it's not through his attorney, he can do it himself.
Larry, does he have any family members or friends that can afford to pay privately a criminal law attorney to look at this file?
No, sir.
Because I think that would be very, very helpful if somebody can come up with something like that.
There's no one he can have that.
All right. Well, I think he's just got to beat on the public defender a little bit harder.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Good luck.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, along with special guest Attorney Malcolm Anthony. We're broadcasting from Jacksonville today. Malcolm is a criminal law attorney, so if you have a criminal law question, please call in and let's talk about that. If you have any other types of questions, I'll do my very best to give you the best answer I can. If I don't know, hey, I say I don't know. And maybe Malcolm will know if I don't know. So
maybe
you never know. So you have a toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. So now I was thinking you could, if something as simple as shoplifting, if you were convicted, you could conceal the record or have it expunged or something. So that's kind of news to me a little bit.
Here that is a common misconception. The other common misconception is, well, it's so old. I had this case 25 years ago. Can I get it sealed? But the truth of the matter on the law is you cannot have been convicted of the crime and cannot have been convicted of any other crime, or you are ineligible for sealing or expunging the record. So usually it's like the shoplifting case, the example you gave, the court doesn't adjudicate the person guilty. The court will withhold adjudication of guilt, assess fines, or the state would divert the case and the person does some community service, takes a consequences of crime class or other tasks, and then the state will drop the charge in exchange for you doing that. That's called a pretrial diversion. Mm-hmm. So those are the types of cases that you can generally seal. You've not been convicted of it. Now, I have in the past someone like that example, gone back and been able to get the court to change the sentence from an adjudication of guilt to a withholding of adjudication of guilt to make the person eligible for sealing. I had a client that was applying to nursing school and had been arrested for a domestic violence battery back in 2000. And we actually were able to go to the court last year, go to the state attorney's office, because she'd never been in trouble before, but she got adjudicated guilty. And we were able to change that to a withholding of adjudication of guilt, and actually had to change the charge too, because without getting into too much detail, some crimes, even with a withhold, can't be sealed. But we're able to do that 17 years later to make her eligible for nursing school, and we were able to accomplish that and get her record sealed.
Suppose you had a marijuana charge in college before you could have a medical marijuana card.
I did not.
And so they withheld, though. They withheld. Can you get that sealed?
If you've not been – a withholding of adjudication guilt on a marijuana charge means you were not convicted. And if you were not convicted of anything else during your lifetime, that's eligible for sealing.
All right.
Now, if on – or expunction, depending on how it was charged.
Okay. All right, so again, if you have a legal question for Attorney Malcolm Anthony here or myself, you have a toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. What about driving records? Like, what about DUIs? Can they ever get those off your record?
Not in Florida, because Florida law requires – if it's a conviction – and Florida law does not allow a court to withhold adjudication of guilt on a DUI. The legislature many years ago made DUIs a priority and want you to be convicted. If you've committed the crime, the court cannot withhold, so you are not eligible to seal it. That's why people should hire an attorney if they're charged with DUI to try to get out of the DUI, legally, of course, by law. Try to find a way to oftentimes get the state to reduce it to reckless driving for a myriad of reasons. But they need to get a good attorney in that case, because if you get convicted of drunk driving, that's going to be public record forever.
All right. So if any of you have a legal question here, again, the phone lines are open at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. What about domestic abuse cases? Any chance of getting those sealed or expunged?
It's interesting you asked that question. Domestic violence battery cases, even if the court withholds adjudication, which you can, and I've seen attorneys represent people, go to court on a domestic violence battery, get a withholding of adjudication of guilt, and the person has no record. And they tell their client, you were not convicted. We got to withhold. Yay, yippee, go on your way. The person calls me to seal and expunge it, and I have to tell them it cannot be because it's a domestic violence battery. And the legislature made that a priority a few years ago. And so that's going to be on your record forever. If you either pled guilty or no contest, whether adjudication of guilt was withheld or not. So those are another case, domestic violence battery cases, where you would be well behooved to get a criminal attorney well versed in, who's been doing it a while and knows the ins and outs, to try to keep that from happening, so that eventually you can seal the record. There is a way to do it. It's complicated and takes some work, but I've done it on two occasions. It's unlikely to get it done, but it can happen the best thing is to get an attorney up front on your domestic violence battery case.
Yeah, you hear cases all the time where there's a big argument between husband and wife, and maybe one just gets pushed a little bit, and they call the police, and the police almost have to arrest someone in that incident every time, right?
Yeah, let me give
pretty
you
much.
Yeah, the history on that, Joe, is that in back in the 80s, when I was a prosecutor back in the 80s, there was a rule, there's still a rule in law, that the officer cannot arrest someone for a misdemeanor that doesn't occur in their presence. That's the general rule. But they made an exception for domestic violence battery cases, that even if the officer didn't see it, he can arrest someone for that. Then, late 80s, a little bit further, you got even more. This legislature said, hey, this is becoming an issue. So if you see evidence like a scratch on the neck or some evidence of violence, now you're authorized to make an arrest even if it didn't occur in your presence. Well, fast forward a few years later, and if an officer responds to a home, now someone's going to jail.
Yeah. Well, suppose the spouse drops the charge along the way. Can that record of that whole thing be expunged or sealed?
Well, first of all, whatever the spouse does, the spouse can't drop the charge. The spouse can request it to be dropped, and that goes a long way with a prosecutor getting it done. But let's assume the spouse says, I want these charges dropped.
Or I'm not going to testify.
Or whatever it is, but the state...
I was mad, and, you know, I'm not sure I said the right thing, and so therefore I want to try. And Kathy from Lakeland, just hold on. As soon as we finish this little conversation, we'll take your question.
It happens all the time.
Yeah, I know.
So. It depends on what the state does with it. Do they drop it? Do they want you to plead for a...
If they drop it, can you get it expunged or sealed?
If they drop it, you can.
All right. Let's go to Kathy in Lakeland. Hello? Is it Katie, Kathy? I can't read. They didn't finish your name. Catherine? Are you there? Hello? All right. I guess if you're there, you need to call back if you want to get on. Unless they give me a sign here that they communicate. Okay. All right. So if you have a legal question, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. And if you have a legal question, it can be just about any area of law. It can be about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, can be about criminal law. If you have a question, we'd love to help you. Again, 877-943-9673. We're about more than halfway through the show now, so give us a call if you have a question. So what is the most common defense when you're dealing with your DUI cases? What is the most common defense? And I want to ask you, maybe before you answer that, I want to ask you, if you get stopped... and let's say you know you've had a couple of drinks, and the officer asks you if you've been drinking, what should your answer be?
Well,
because they're all going to ask you that, right?
Generally, they'll ask you one of the first questions, and then there are some troopers and officers that they pull you over for anything. If it's after 11 p.m., first question they're going to ask you, have you been drinking tonight? I'll tell you a funny story. I had a client pull up at a roadblock, you know, when they're stopping so many cars all the time. And the officer asked him, sir, have you been drinking tonight? And his response was, sure, if you don't hydrate, you die. But so,
did the officer laugh?
Yeah, it was pretty funny. But yeah, they'll ask that generally. That's up to you. I'm not going to tell you what to say or not on that situation, but, they don't have to have that information unless there's a reason for it. But many officers just ask that very first thing. And, you know, it's interesting. They never say, have you been drinking alcoholic beverages tonight? So, have you been drinking? Well, you know.
Well, that would be if they say yes, they might ask to expound on it a little bit. All right. So you have a choice of whether to, you know, take the test and all that. When you get stopped, right?
Let me go back to your other question about what the defense.
Okay.
Because I can break that down into factual defenses and legal defenses. Let me say the greatest legal defense, which is a home run, is bad stop. If the officer has stopped you for an unconstitutional reason or stopped you for a reason that's really not going to hold up under the traffic laws, then all evidence obtained from that stop is inadmissible against you.
They all say you're weaving, right?
Most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's interesting. They used to say, you know, when you weave across lanes, you stop them for failure to maintain a single lane. But Florida law allows you to change lanes. So then the rule is you've got to do it with safety. So if you don't interfere with other traffic and you're changing a lane, that's not a failure to maintain single lane. So then the officer started writing it as a failure to obey traffic control device because a lane line is a traffic control device. But I actually had the case, a Duval County case, where that happened and did the research on the manual on uniform traffic control devices, a federal manual. There are certain control devices that give you instructions some that don't. Well, lane lines or even the marker on the outside of the your roadway is called a fog line. And there's no instructions. It's just telling you where the edge of the road is. In fact, in that case, we showed photos where my client had passed. In other words, those fog lines cross entrances to go into the Winn-Dixie. Mm-hmm. Or the shopping center. And so, according to the officer's testimony, he couldn't go shopping. And so we were able to show that that is a traffic control device, but my client didn't violate it because it doesn't give any instructions. So those are just some interesting takes on
all
that.
All right, we'll come back to that. Let's go to Kathy, who's back on the line now. Hey, Kathy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great, and you?
Well, have a quick question. 2 years ago, a family member was working for Department of Children and Families. A complaint came in against another family member. And since then, my daughter has been accused and wondered if there's anything that can be done to find out who did it and try to clear her name.
Well, who you want to know if there's any way to find out who reported her to the Department of Children and Families?
Yes, because it's divided the whole family.
I think there's probably not a way to find out who reported it because they want the person who reported it to be punished, particularly if they think there was just cause in doing it. So I'm going to say, and Malcolm can maybe shed a little light on this, I don't think they have a duty, nor are they usually willing to disclose the name of who reported an incident. Now, as far as clearing her record, is any Department of Children and Family reports like that, can they be expunged off the record somehow? It's not probably a crime at that point, Kathy.
Well, yeah. Kathy, let me ask you this. I'm not sure I understood your question. The individual, someone reported a family member for an abuse of some kind?
Of a child, right?
Of a child. Well, false abuse reporting in itself is a crime.
Yes.
So if it can be proven that
that's what we need to know.
And so, what kind of attorney would handle a case to who would you file a lawsuit against if you don't know who reported it?
As a crime, it's a crime to falsely report abuse that didn't occur.
Right.
Can you sue DCF for the records?
Well, no, the state attorney will be able to obtain them. If you go to the state attorney's office or call the police and report, there's been a false report of abuse, and I want the person prosecuted, then I think they're going to have to at least look at it and determine they can get the name, they can find out who it is, and then they can determine whether it was falsely done or not and prosecute the individual.
Okay, so I ideally want my husband, who's also sitting here with me, to hear this. How would we go about this to get the information?
I guess make an appointment with the state attorney and file a complaint.
Or just call your...
With the state attorney, because the worker at DCF says that she did not do it, and just to clear the name or find out, that's what we need to do.
Well, your difficulty, Kathy, is going to be whether the alleged abuser denies it or admits it isn't going to be the issue. The issue is going to be, can you prove it didn't happen? You've got to be able, or the state can. The state would have to prove there was no abuse and there was no reason for a person to even report it to prove a false report of abuse.
And the person that sat behind this worker was accused of drug dealing.
I would report that, either call the
district attorney. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Hope that helps you.
It does. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Let's go to Danny in St. Petersburg.
Good morning. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Are felons ever able to get their concealed carry permits?
Not under current law.
Okay, what about if they get their
In fact, felons cannot. It's a second-degree felony, punishable by 15 years to possess a firearm as a felon. So, obviously, it's against the law to possess it. The administrative agency gives the license isn't going to license.
Well, can a felony ever be expunged or sealed, or can some felonies be expunged or concealed?
Certainly.
If he can get his record expunged or sealed, then he could carry a weapon.
If he was not adjudicated guilty.
Okay.
If there was a withholding of adjudication of guilt, and it's not one of the disqualifiable crimes under 943, 059, and 0585, then you would be eligible, and you haven't been convicted of any other crime, you could be eligible to have the record sealed. But even with a sealed record, I'm not sure on the application process for the extra licensing, if that's going to be a disqualifier for that. But if you were not convicted of the felony, at least then you can lawfully possess the firearm.
Okay, Danny?
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Let's go to David in Jacksonville.
Good morning. I heard a discussion a couple of weeks ago about a pour-over will, and I'd like to know exactly what that is.
Well, when a person has a living trust, they do a will. I call it a catch-all document. So it's a will that leaves everything the person didn't properly place in the trust to the trust. So, for example, the example I like to give is a person had five bank accounts and they had a living trust and they changed the name of four of those to their name trustee in the trust, but they forgot to do one. The will would leave that one to the trust. So that's why it's called a pour-over will. Everything kind of pours over into the trust.
Well, that makes sense. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to Fred in Sun City Center.
Good morning. An arrest on, let's say, an unlawful tag on a car, and the case was no processed. Is that still on record, or what's the situation? I don't understand no process.
Okay, the term is actually null pros, two words, null. Latin, NOL space PROS, short for actually nulla prosequi, a Latin
right.
term. Which
now
means,
you're just showing off.
Which means just a dropping of the charge. So the charge was dropped if there was an all pros.
Yes. That's the case. So there's no record and nothing to...
Now, let me clear up a misconception with you about records. People ask me all the time, well, will I have a record? Well, in the general parlance... That means, hey, will I have a record of a conviction? Will I have a conviction? So in that sense, the person has no record. The case was null prost. But records are just paperwork. So there are records of the stop, the citation, the charging document, if there was one, all the arrest mitimus. So there are records out there which are available in our public. So when you say, well, at least I don't have a record, I just want to make sure you understand there's paperwork out there. Now, if you want to seal or expunge that will remove those from the public record and be available only to law enforcement.
Right. So something with no pros and you wish to have it totally gone, you should have it expunged.
Expunged or sealed, depending on what you're eligible for. If it was null pros, you should be eligible for an expunction. If you have no other record of any kind, which means the agencies, the arresting agency, the citation agency, the clerk will destroy their records. Now, FDLE, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and the FBI, will continue to keep a record of it.
Even a traffic situation.
Right, but it won't be available to the public. In other words, I go to look it up and I go on the clerk's website, it won't be there.
When it's no prost.
If it's sealed or expunged.
If it's sealed or expunged, so that's another step.
Yes, that's another step.
All right. Thanks. I hope we helped you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
All right. All right, Malcolm, why don't you give you, before we run out of time here, why don't you give all of your contact information, somebody wants to contact you. We'll try to do it again at the end, but I don't want to miss it now. So.
Well, the name is Malcolm Anthony. You can find me online at malcolmanthony.com. I'm in the Jacksonville metro area in Ponte Vedra Beach. The phone number is 904-285-4LAW, which is 4529.
All right, and we'll try to do that again right at the end. Let's go to Barry in Tampa. Barry in Tampa, yes.
Thanks for taking my call. My son is going to school and working up in Tallahassee. He's in a apartment where his lease ends in about 5 weeks. 3 days ago, he came home from work, and he's on the third floor, and found that the ceiling was leaking horribly in several places, running around, getting buckets, cups to fill everything up. It's like brown, brackish water that's coming down. He reached out to the apartment complex, and at first they just basically said it's rainwater, there's nothing to worry about. But it got all over his furniture, ruined one of his rugs, so on and so forth. So he kept pressing the issue with them about what was going to be done. And finally, what the office decided was, we've gone up and seen it, and we don't think that it's good for you to live in that apartment anymore, so we want to move you to another apartment. Well, he had to leave work to deal with all this, and for him to move to the other apartment on another floor, he'd have to miss a day's work to do that as well. So basically he's like, well, if that's going to happen, you need to cover my wages for loss of work, and I need a couple of guys to help me, you know, move my furniture for a couple hours because all my friends are working too.
Hey, here's what I tell people to do in these type of cases. Tell them to go down to small claims court, get some forms, fill them out, show them to the landlord that, you know, I hate to do this, but you guys need to settle with me. This is not right. You damaged. You were negligent in not taking care of this problem. My furniture is damaged, which you recognize by moving me. You know, and I want, I don't know, say $1,000 for loss of work and damages. And if you don't proceed, then I guess I'll just have to file these papers in small claims court, so then you don't have to pay the attorney fees. And just by taking that step of showing me you're serious might work.
Okay. I guess the other option question we had was his lease has that casualty clause which says if an apartment becomes uninhabitable that either they or you can terminate the lease with no, you know, penalty or punishment.
Yeah, well, maybe they'll maybe negotiate just get him out of the lease.
Yeah.
Or maybe not pay the last month's rent. I mean, they're... And once a person exhausts everything they can do themselves, sometimes you have to hire an attorney to get involved to be your advocate.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right, guys. Thanks for taking the call. You have a great day.
Let's go to Diane in Sarasota.
Diane, we have about
a minute, so...
Oh.
So that could be enough time for you?
I think so. I have a question about a Chapter 7 bankruptcy. I had approximately 2 years, 6 months ago, been in a Chapter 13.
Hey, Diane, let me tell you this. I have a bankruptcy attorney on my staff, and you, since we're running out of time, if you want to call the office, he'll give you a free consult. So the number is 727.
Wait a minute, 727?
586.
Okay.
586. 3306.
3306.
Extension, extension 116.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Now, thank you for your wonderful service to the public.
Well, thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
All right. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. Again, I'm Attorney Joe Pippin. If you'd like to contact our office, we have a toll-free number. We have multiple offices really all over the state, so we have a toll-free number, 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529. Malcolm, go ahead and give your phone number again.
It's Malcolm Anthony's the name. The number is 904-285-4529 or 285-4LAW, or you can find me on the web at malcolmanthony.com.
Hey, happy Father's Day to all you fathers out there. Special happy Father's Day to my father. Love you, Dad. And see you very, very soon. Thanks for listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. You have a great, safe weekend. So long.